Processes and tools dominate today's Agile discussions, but we are devoted to the individuals and interactions that make it work. From the beginner to the veteran practitioner, we have something for you. Welcome to Agile for Humans.
Welcome to Agile for Humans. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. You guys know the drill. We bring amazing people together to talk about cool ideas in the Agile community. We're almost at show 100. We've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now. You know that we examine the current Agile tips and practices. We're trying to help you become an Agile leader in your organization. To help us out, please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, subscribe on Patreon at ryanripley.com. And as always, thank you for supporting the show. Your support allows us to bring great people like our two guests tonight onto the show to bring these insights forward and to help the Agile community. We have multiple subscriber levels, a lot of stuff going on the Patreon, a lot of stuff on the site. Check it out. As always, we're taking your questions and comments. Email Ryan at ryanripley.com. Leave a comment at on the show post. Happy to get back and answer it. And just thank you, as always, for the support and for sharing the show. Joining me tonight, of course, everyone remembers many of the episodes we've had with Esther Derby. Esther, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's Esther, when you join us, I'm always happy. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, me too.
And of course, yeah,
me and my dog.
I can
so
hear
if there's
the,
barking, it's the dog.
I love it. The snoring
oh,
in the background.
Now she's snoring. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It makes the show more authentic. And it's all, and of course, joining us also, my partner in crime, Faye Thompson. Faye, I think we just, by the time this gets out, people will probably know that we did a keynote in Vegas together, had a great time doing that.
Yay!
Lots of good feedback. We're finally on that keynote track. And again, it worked in Africa. It worked in Vegas.
Yeah, I don't know where you go from there.
I don't know.
It also worked in Louisville.
It also worked, yeah,
worked
Louisville
in Louisville,
too. No, it worked great at Codapalooza. We had a lot of fun keynoting there. We just did Vegas. Last year was Africa. Who knows what's next, but always great to see my partner in crime.
So where do you want to speak next? And we can kind of put out the word here and see if someone in the audience would invite you. So what city sounds appealing?
Oh, that's fun. Let's see. So my dream one, and then Faye, you tell me what you think of this. I would love to keynote in London.
Oh, absolutely. You and I haven't talked about this much, but that's kind of like I feel like that's my home away from home. I've lived there a couple of times. I went to school there for a little while. So I welcome any opportunity to get back there.
Wait, weren't you a sheep
London
herder?
London listeners.
I did work on a sheep farm, not in London, on along the English Channel. I was a sheep herder, as it were.
Yeah, so that's our shameless plug. So for the European listeners out there, contact your London-based Agilists and conference organizers. Let them know that Faye and I have a pretty cool keynote, and we'll see if we can make it over there. So, but tonight, the topic, and this is a topic that I love this idea, this whole learning to learn and how do you learn and what makes learning effective and all that stuff. Esther, can you help us out by teeing this up?
Sure. I spent the first 2 weeks of June in Ohio at an art class. I've spent my entire professional career in software, so this was rather a departure, and I was very, very interested to observe my own process and to think about it in terms of empathy for my clients and for the people we work with who are, you know, in organizations used to working in a particular way, and then here we come and we want to talk about Agile and we want to talk about complexity. And so it was really interesting to put myself in the position of being a beginner and, you know, sometimes hearing the English words but having no idea what the concept was.
That's how we got started talking about this, not only because it was Central Ohio, but just on the topic of learning and what does it mean to learn. I had been having conversations with my current client about limited training budgets and then what does that mean for professional development among their team members. And so we've been talking a lot at work about what it what learning actually looks like. And that's actually led to some additional research and a talk that I'm giving later this year, a couple of times, Cincinnati Day of Agile and Agile 2018, along these lines of just what does learning look like and how can we accomplish it. So then as Esther was progressing through her experience, a lot of this sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that a lot of learning takes place outside of training classes. Yes. And training classes, address one aspect of learning. And there's so much more involved in terms of, I think, reorganizing the way you understand words and concepts and, having to reconstruct or construct an entirely different set of relationships and understandings in your brain.
Yeah, I love that. And, Esther, I think you and Don are excellent at this in your Coaching Beyond the Team workshop, where, I had to learn, I'm not classically trained as a coach. And so I'm always very hesitant to accept the title of Agile Coach because I don't think I believe I know a lot about Scrum. And I think as a professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org, I've earned that as far as being able to say I know a few things about Scrum. But when it comes to coaching, I typically reject the Agile Coaching title because I don't know it yet. But what I liked about your Coaching Beyond the Team, I think that was a good first step for me, is because the two of you were able to rewire my brain a bit in that whenever I'm walking into a situation, whether it's with family or with a client or with my wife or with my kids, the center, enter, turn.
Mm.
And the fact that my brain now says, Ryan, have you centered yourself yet? And so that was a really cool, the way that you've distilled that and you've made it experiential, but you also gave us time to reflect, but you also gave us theory. I think hitting all those different ways of learning helped. And plus, the learner has to internalize as well, right? We have to make an effort. But I think the way that that you and Don have been able to structure that kind of learning to kind of hit all the different ways people learn has been really fascinating to watch as it's kind of changed the way that they've approached people.
Oh, interesting. Well, Don and I both studied with the master. We studied with Jerry Weinberg. So greatly influenced by his ideas about learning. It's interesting. You bring up center, enter, turn. And I think in some ways that described my experience over and over and over again during those 2 weeks. And I was studying with Nancy Crow, who is one of the premier quilters. She's known as an artist, and quilts are her medium, right? So she's really an artist. But so there's a certain level of technical skills there. You have to be able to, sew a quarter inch seam and cut by eye and with a rotary cutter and all sorts of stuff like that. But I would find myself getting some instruction and, I understood the English words and I'd feel this sort of fog. And then there was a little tendency to just feel overwhelmed. And so I'd have to center myself and enter the exercise and read it again and just try something, not being very clear on the concept necessarily, but just try something in terms of, a design or a color relationship or something working with the tension and figure and ground. And then I could turn, right? But first I had to deal with that little dip of feeling overwhelmed, of feeling like I don't understand, I'm in a fog, why am I here? That kind of thing. And then I could work with it. So that's interesting because that came up over and over and over again in the 2 weeks.
Yeah. Go ahead, Faye.
Did it get easier as you were each time as you experienced that, or did you find it was...
It became more familiar, and in some ways this is anytime you enter a situation with a client where, you think you're centered and then something comes up that you weren't expected, then you go through that cycle again. It's like you get to say, oh shit, and then you have to center yourself and enter the system and turn. So there was a lot of that, oh, and then enter the system, my own system.
And part of that, too, is being comfortable with the idea that you just have to kind of throw your hands up sometimes and say, you know, oh, no, I'm in that spot. Mm-hmm. What I've learned, too, is that I don't get things on the first pass very often. And so, and at first that used to really frustrate me, that I've read something or something was demonstrated or I've tried to learn something and on the first pass I may not have caught it. But that time that you're spending just quiet or walking or cooking dinner or playing with the kids, your brain's working on that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? There's a subconscious pattern that, and I had to get very comfortable with being okay with failure on the first pass because the brain's working on it. And then when I come back later to it, it seems a little easier. And it's like, wow, this was so silly. Why did I have so much trouble?
But you know what? I think that's really hard for a lot of us in our field because we were the smart kids. You know, most of us in software, we were the smart kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we got stuff really easily and we got a lot of affirmation for being smart and being quick. And then when we run into something where we don't get it the first time, I think it's hard for people emotionally if they're kind of aware of their emotions going into it. But it also can hit on people's identity.
Right.
You know, like, well, if I don't get this right away, does it mean I'm not smart? And I think that dynamic, goes on for a lot of people. I mean, it has gone on for me at various times in my life until I figured out what was going on. But I think that's something to be aware of with all the people that we're working with, trying to introduce new ideas and new ways of doing things.
Right. And if we recognize that someone's going through that, we go through that ourselves, or someone's experiencing that questioning or self-doubt or what does it mean? Do I really know myself? That kind of thing. Yeah. So things are all like they bring heightened levels of anxiety and fear.
Absolutely.
And it puts us in a different mindset. So understanding, that's where that empathy comes in, right? That's understanding
right.
that people can be going through that around us. And how can we react? How can we help to maybe just in the moment even make them feel safer that everything's okay and we can work through things together?
Yeah, so I think there's empathy for self because I'm at least encountering situations I've never encountered before and I have to figure out what to do in the moment. And empathy for the people we're working with, I think that's super important.
Well, we were just talking before the show about a situation that I'm in that I've never been in before.
Mm.
And it's a huge change that will have huge consequences and implications and benefits and pros and cons. And yeah, I think we're in those a lot. And one of the things is research, right? So you want to research things. But I think the other thing that we, first of all, being okay with the fact that we're a little scared about something, I think we have to get over that. In some way or another, but also it's the people that surround us. You know, Esther, we were talking and you were very supportive. And I think having people around us that make learning safe, right? And even having people around us who make making mistakes safe is a huge part of actually enabling that learning environment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not present in many corporations.
Right.
And I think it's harder the higher you go in the organization. I shared a little article with you, Faye, when we were talking about this called The Trifecta of Doom. And it had to do with the forces that are in play in a lot of organizations that make it particularly risky for managers to admit they don't know the answer, they don't know what to do, they don't understand the concept, they might understand the concept, but they don't know what, how to carry it out. Because there's such a high expectations that managers know all the answers. You know, if you're management material, obviously, it's because you have this superior ability. And so entering into that space of not knowing, I think, again, it comes to identity. It puts identity at risk here. You know, if I'm struggling, does that mean maybe I'm not smart? Maybe I'm not management material.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about how can, you know, in that sort of scrum master or team coach space, how can we help team members feel safe to experiment and try new things and fail and learn it from that. And because that's where the learning happens, the trying something new. So then taking what we learn and sharing it with others. And we're still struggling with that, right? How to make teams feel safe about doing those things. And if in, lack of a better term, in corporate America, we don't do a great job of that yet. We sure as heck don't do a great job of that for people outside the team or above the team. We do not create that kind of safe space for managers to try new things and fail and learn. So what can we do about that?
Well, as you were talking about that, and since Ryan brought up the workshop that Don Gray and I do, it's like, I know some people who try to make everything in their workshop perfect. Like they try to have their intro be perfect. They try to have everything, like, you know, orchestrated perfectly. And I don't do that, as you guys both know. You know, I mean, I keep some of those things a little loose and rough around the edges, and that's partly, a message around, you don't have to be perfect. You know, I'm gonna, you know, do some small screw up in the class, and people are gonna see it, and I'm gonna recover reasonably well, and that in some ways is modeling that, yeah, it's gonna happen.
As I've listened to you explain these things, I just a thought popped in my head, and I'm not sure what this means, but I find it amazing just how much we abuse ourselves and others in the workplace. By holding ourselves to these insane standards that we have to know everything and we have to be perfect. Yeah. And if someone asks us a question, we'd better give an answer rather than just saying, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know.
Or I'll get back to you. But just the amount of emotional and even psychological abuse that we inflict on ourselves in that situation is just profound.
Well, we learn it. We start learning that really, really early.
Well, I guess even in school, what happens if you're asked a question by the teacher and you say you don't know, right? That's not a good thing.
Yeah. Humiliated in front of the whole group, and maybe all the kids will laugh at you. Yeah. So that encourages people to try things on, that's for sure. But yeah, so that's a model that we all grew up with, and it's very prevalent in a lot of organizations. So I think modeling is something we can do. Sure. Modeling that I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. Well, let's figure it out.
Well, and that's something that I love doing during workshops. You know, someone that I've gone to this format, and Faye and I have co-presented this format of just taking questions from the audience and turning that into a keynote or a portion of a workshop. Because quite honestly, I'm sick of canned talks. I really am. I look at every canned talk that I've done, and if people pay me enough money, or if they ask me nicely, I'll probably still do them. And I am still doing some canned talks. But what I love about the fact that people are asking questions, I get the opportunity to say, I don't know, in each and every, even in our keynote. We had a situation where it was like, you know what, maybe we don't know the most about this. What do you think? And someone stood up in the audience and gave us an opinion, and we built off of that, and it turned into this collaborative co-creating event, and it was better than if either one of us had just given an answer. And I think people saw that. And if there is a way to bring that forward into our work where, hey, I don't know, but I think these three people might have some interesting ideas that we can put together that will lead to an answer that's satisfying and beneficial to the company. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be cool if we could do that? I mean, those are the kind of things that I really get excited about now. But yeah, the safety for that is really problematic.
Well, you and I were just discussing either yesterday or the day before about, I was in a conversation where someone counseled me, don't ever say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, and I said, well, I would never say I don't know and walk away. I would say, I don't know, but, you know, if I start to parse this out, here are some things I do know, or here's how I might get started learning more about this, or here's who I might go talk to learn more. But yeah, just saying I don't know and walk away, that's not an option, or probably shouldn't be an option. But yeah, someone just counseled me. This person was actually counseling me to just go ahead and talk and sort of make something up. And I definitely disagree with that take.
Is it fair to say?
Oh, my.
Is it fair to say that we all work in a complex space?
Yes.
And is absolutely. Is it possible to know or plan complexity perfectly?
No.
And so in the Agile space and working with companies who proclaim to want to be Agile, I don't know, but here's an experiment we can try, has to be an okay answer.
Right. But, you know, so we know that. But I promise you that I definitely work with people who have worked in software for a long time and kind of don't grok that. And this is actually was a part of our ongoing discussion about learning, because the notion that teams need to learn on the job is still foreign. It's still a foreign idea. The fact even that you can have a team that has worked, let's say they've worked on building out and supporting an application for years, and the fact that that team still has more to learn when they build new things or when they integrate with another app, that there's any learning to be done, that is not a shared understanding of what that team is working through. So that's a place right there, I think, that we could use some work in the workplace of just understanding that learning has to occur every day. You're going to uncover something you didn't know. Some point during the day, you're going to uncover something you didn't know at the start of the day. And so then what do you do with it? It's that mindset that powers hiring, where we hire someone for a specific technology skill. Let's say they've been coding in Java for 2 years. When we go hire Java developers, we still are surprised to learn that they have more to learn when they get into our environment and into our context. And then we can't just plug them in and have them run be a little Java coding machine.
Have them hit the ground running.
Exactly. Like that's
be productive on
us.
The first day.
Right.
So that, I mean, that requires people to ignore their own experience. Right.
It requires reflecting part to me, right?
Well, I'm firmly convinced that when people forget about half of what they know about how the world really works when they get into their office. I mean, we all know at home that if we're doing 7 home repair projects or 7 craft projects at the same time, none of them's going to get done very fast. But somehow people forget that when they get into work, you know, and we all know that people need to rest, but we forget that when we get into work, you know. So there's all sorts of stuff that that doesn't exist within that system, right? All sorts of awarenesses that I don't know that they're impossible, but they seem difficult within that system. And part of it, I think, has to do with the still dominant metaphor of machine. You know, right. Faye, you talked about just plugging people in. I mean, it's machine parts don't need to learn, right? So why would people?
Right.
Very fair. So what are the resources that the two of you turn to when you're trying to figure out interesting ways to learn, concepts and ideas around learning, or even when you're trying to come up with ways to help leaders and organizations that you're working with kind of see that light bulb moment around learning? What have you done to kind of provoke that, or resources that you've kind of slid under the door, things like that? I do that. I slide articles under the door. I don't know if the two of you do that.
Well, I do experiments. So, well, let's just try something, and the thought process there can help. Sometimes I do thought experiments. So, well, let's just think about this. What if? And try on some ideas. I try reasoning by analogy to access the sorts of knowledge that people have, you know, in real life, but somehow forget at the job. Yeah, so that's part of it that I do, you know, in small ways and interactions.
Yeah, I think especially that last one is good because, as you said, we're all aware that there are these influences. We're aware we can't work on multiple things at once successfully. Mm-hmm. We're aware that you don't just pick up someone and drop them into a new setting and have them function like a Lego that's been plugged in properly. Mm-hmm. We know that. But we forget about it. So how can we remind people of that sort of gently? If you're talking more tangible resources, I guess. I'm a big reader, so I try to pass along books. But I know that not everybody reads the whole book. They might read the end notes or whatever. They might read the flaps.
So a lot of the stuff about learning is pretty academic, mm-hmm. and not particularly accessible. I actually think Carol Dweck's book Mindset is can be super helpful.
Right, and I feel it's a rather quick read.
So. Yeah, it's a rather quick read, and if that's too long, you can always look at Linda Rising's keynote from several years ago.
Right.
Because that also addresses the whole idea about how limiting it is to have the idea that, well, if I don't get something, it means I'm not smart, right? To have that mindset that, you know, if I'm a smart person, I would get this. And it comes out of a certain way of being interacted with when you're little, generally speaking.
Right.
So that I think that's a useful resource.
And for people who don't have time to listen or read that, she has a great TED talk as well around that study and around those concepts.
Oh,
So TED talks are another one or podcasts, conveniently. You can often share those with people.
Oh, there's another one that I just thought of, and I'm not going to remember her name. I could look it up and send it to you for the notes, but it's I think the title is Being Wrong.
Yes.
Adventures in Error.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a very good one.
Yeah. And it's about, you know, most people don't walk around thinking, oh, you know, I'm wrong about this belief I have. But we all are wrong about various beliefs. So what happens? How do we move into another set of beliefs? How does that process happen? So that's another great resource.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Everything we say at the time we think is right, and it's only later through reflection or correction that we have the opportunity to believe that we're wrong. And
but people often don't give those things up easily, right? Until they have a whole different set of beliefs to kind of latch onto. So how do you incrementally build up that different set of beliefs?
So, yeah, and we even have biases that actually make us believe that we believed those things all along. So we have a built-in, we have a built-in mechanism that
aren't we wonderful? Yeah.
Well, and everything goes back to that our lizard brain protecting us from something that might harm us, and that's why a lot of times in those moments, you know, when it's two people sharing their conflicting mindsets, that we refuse to budge. Like, we know what we know and that's it. And it's later on, as you said, that we built another model that we're comfortable moving toward. But yeah, we have a bias that will lead us to believe that that's what we thought all along. And we didn't actually change our minds. We just have now uncovered the nuances that make it okay for us to talk about this other mindset.
Yeah. So, and sometimes people can make that shift. I mean, I know my mother was brought up in a particular religion, and for various reasons relating to my father, took on a different religion. And I remember being, I don't know, I was fairly small. I might have been like 10 years old, and we were back in her hometown, and you know, she took me into the church she had grown up in, and we came out, and she said, "I can't believe I used to believe all these things." So sometimes people actually do look back and say, I can't believe. So
I had one of those moments, not necessarily related to religion, but just a blog post that I wrote probably 5 years ago got tweeted somewhere. Someone was digging through the site and found something they liked and tweeted it out. But I read it and I wasn't happy. Like, I read it and I thought, wow, my thoughts have advanced so far past this. And I almost went to rewrite it, and someone stopped me. And they said, "No, honor the way that you thought before. If it needs updated, do a new blog post, but actually just appreciate the fact that your thinking has changed and kind of celebrate that. Like, don't be embarrassed that you had wrong thoughts." And so even I get caught in that too, where I'm like, wow, if I just change this blog post, if I update it, no one will ever see that I typed something that's probably not correct. And then it finally, the person was right. I mean, it's, 5 years ago I had this weird thought about Scrum, and I'm glad the person found the article useful, but now I need to go and write an update because my thinking has changed.
That's a more interesting article, how your thoughts have changed and progressed over the years. And it's modeling that behavior of allowing yourself to fail and learn something new and move on.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things I think about differently now than I did 10 or 15 years ago. You know, and then there's the things I look at that I wrote 15 years ago and say, "Oh, we're still struggling with that."
Keep trying. When you showed me that article a couple weeks ago, I said that to you, like, "Oh, thank you, this is perfect. However, I'm disheartened that you wrote this 7 years ago."
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Takes a long time to change things. Until they change really fast. Sometimes that happens. You work on the little things and suddenly, poof, everything shifts.
Right. So and that's a good way. That's another good point to bring up, is that everything shifts. Because I was thinking, too, when you were describing your art class scenario, the other factor in that is that you were a willing participant in that. You signed up for that and paid for that with your own money and drove a long way to get here. And how often are we talking about people who want to learn, or they've been told to learn something new, and they're not there necessarily willingly. Yeah. And that's a different mindset. So then when they encounter something when they encounter the English words that no longer make sense, then they're an entirely different mindset.
Yeah. And even having made that choice myself, there was a moment when it was like, you know, if I could, I'd just go home. But I hadn't driven, so I couldn't. Fortunately, I was there with a friend of mine, and fortunately, our moments were at a different cycle. So when she was at a moment of saying, you know, if I could go home, I would. It was like, no, we're staying. And when I was in that state, So that's another thing, having someone to learn with as a support system.
Yeah, I definitely think the people around you, it makes a world of difference. I shouldn't talk about this, but even our Agile for Humans Slack channel. And so again, dear listeners, we would love to have you there, but we will not sell access. We will not take bribes. We will not be bullied. But if you're on the show, you get to join. So that's the cost of admission. But what I have found is even a lot of support from that group trying to, when we try new things, if we have posts that we're unsure about, if we have experiments to think about. And it's just that the people you surround yourself with, I think, are so enabling. They can either make or break your whole life and career. I'm very grateful to have, people like the two of you around, to bounce ideas off of, to talk to vent to.
Likewise.
And I think it's made all the difference in my ability to be more, conscious of the necessity to learn. Part of it too is you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
I think I've told this story a few times where, I showed up to a coach camp many years ago, and I thought I knew something, and I said a few weird things, and Don actually pulled me to the side. He's like, Ryan, I like you. I think you probably have some talent, but I need you to be quiet here for a minute and listen. And it was a great talk. Like, I needed to hear that. I think he might have said it a little more diplomatically, but the message was,
wow.
The message was, you're liked. You don't have to be insecure, but you need to listen for a little bit. And he was right. And it was through that that I was able to kind of just chill out a bit, sit back and listen and learn and try new things. And it was very powerful. And I really, step one of the learning, I think, is at least step zero. If we let's do a sprint zero on learning, right? Have good people around you that encourage and lift up and help. And from there, I think for the moral of Esther's story, one of the morals I'm taking from it and one that I fully believe in is try something different. You know, I was telling Esther and Faye before the show, like, I try to pick up a different skill every year. There's just something weird. Like, right now, it's sleight of hand with decks of cards. So I've bought some old, like, books from the 50s about magic or sleights with cards, and I'm trying to pick up a few tricks, work on some dexterity, keep the mind sharp. Last year, I had a huge focus on chess. I'm trying to get very skilled at that game. You know, each year for the past few years, it's been trying to try something different that makes me uncomfortable just because I want to have that beginner mind, right?
Yeah.
I think it's why I like training so much, too, is because when I'm in a scrum class and I'm teaching, I get these questions that don't necessarily occur to me anymore, but then I get to think about those things in the beginner mind mm-hmm. again. I think getting connected back to that is just so important.
Yeah, I mean, and I again, it comes back to that empathy of the understanding what it's like to be a beginner. And in many cases, we're working with people who have, you know, they have years of experience in their current domain, but they're shifting. So how do we retain the empathy for that?
And I think that's, yeah. I love kind of tying a bow on this with empathy. I think that's the right place to leave it as. We're curious, we have empathy, no judgment, and just really see how that plays out. And so I definitely want to be respectful of your time here, and I know we're coming up on our time box. And so I think it's time to transition into the part of the show where it's really your platform. And so Esther, I think we'll start with you. What do you have coming up? What would you like to promote? How can the listeners stay in contact with you? How can they? I know I will recommend the newsletter. I get a ton out of Esther's newsletter. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you're not subscribed to it, subscribe to it. You get some articles from her periodically that are great. But
maybe she'll write one soon.
Maybe. Hopefully.
Maybe.
But no, I've gotten a lot of value out of it. So I'll plug that one and put a link to the show notes. But anything else, Esther, that you have going on?
Well, I'm also doing another new thing, which is I am learning about doing online courses.
Oh, nice.
And as my first thing, I decided that I would do something that I'm quite familiar with, and just concentrate on learning the platform and how to make material interesting and lively in this sort of online framework. So I'm putting together an online class on retrospectives.
Awesome.
And how to do an effective retrospective. Because I know people are exposed to it in Scrum classes. I know you've talked to me about what you do in yours. But, you know, you've got so much to cover, you can't go into it in depth. So this class is aimed at people who have been exposed to a retrospective, the idea of a retrospective, or maybe have been doing retrospectives for a while, but want them to be more effective. So I'm going to be launching that probably at the end of July. That's what I'm aiming for now. And when I'm ready to launch it, I'll send you the link and a little discount coupon for Agile for Human listeners.
Well, I hope you come back on the show and tell us all about it, Esther.
Well, I'd be happy to do that too.
That is super exciting. I will, I am looking forward to seeing that. That's just of course, your book is the Bible of retrospectives, and to see some online content is just going to be I think an awesome follow-up. So thanks for sharing that.
Oh, I hope so.
And we'll get website, Twitter handle, all that in the show notes in case people want to ask some follow-up questions. Hey, how about you? What do you have coming up?
Yeah. I think at the end of July, I want to say July 27th, I'll be at Cincinnati Day of Agile talking about cultivating space for learning, and also talking about kind of rethinking or reevaluating the metrics you might be using with your team with one of my Cardinal Solutions partners, Chuck Huseman.
Nice.
So we're going to be talking about that there. Great conference. If you are in the area, it's just one day and a great group of people organizing that. And then after that, I'll be at Agile 2018.
Me too.
Woohoo. Big party.
Nice. But,
yeah. And I do want to do a plug for someone else's book. Ryan, your talk about trying a new skill every year. There's a great book out there by a neuroscientist named Wendy Suzuki called Healthy Brain, Happy Life. And she tells kind of her story about how she sort of learned to be happy with herself by stopping setting these unrealistic standards for herself and stop beating herself up in her self-talk. But she recommends lots of exercises for retraining your brain. And many of them are just around that, like exercising your brain by trying things you've never tried before. And she even gives almost like what I consider micro exercises, like every day, listen to a song from a genre that you never would otherwise listen to, and listen to it closely, and listen to the lyrics and the rhythms, things like that. So she gives lots of little tidbits like that of things you could try.
That's awesome. I'll get that in the show notes. And
so one more thing I want to add to the show notes, because we've talked about safety and empathy and learning a lot. We cannot leave without mentioning Amy Edmondson and her work on safety and learning. So she has done great. I'll send you a link to the research paper.
Very cool. Yeah, I hope people got a lot out of this. It's this is kind of a meta type of episode, right? It's learning how to learn or learning about learning, but it's something that especially moving from traditional management or project management or development, and well, development, I think, along with being an agilist, you're just a lifelong learner. And if you're not learning, it's essential. Like, you're either learning or you're getting behind. And so I hope people really listen in on this and pull a few good ideas out about how to just continue that passion for learning, how to empower others to learn, and how to be a good partner in someone else's learning. I think that's important too. How do we partner up and help other people grow? Because I have found the most satisfaction in partnering with people, mentoring, pairing, trying to help others grow and learn and change. And I think I have found that at the end, I've changed as well. And so I think that's a really rewarding path to go down. But as for me, I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. I have too much coming up. Doing a ton of scrum.org courses. Again, many of the listeners might know I'm a trainer now. If you're interested, reach out. Can love to talk about that stuff. I'll be speaking at Indie Project Con here coming up in September. So I'll be down in Indianapolis speaking at that event. I've got a Q&A coming up in Louisville, Kentucky on July 12th. So I'll be down with the Derby City Agile user group, taking their questions and trying to help them with what's causing them trouble. TechWell Agile Plus DevOps East 2018, first week in November. And just bouncing all over the country talking Scrum and helping teams grow. So a lot of good stuff going on there. And as always, RyanRipley.com, at Ryan Ripley on Twitter. Hit me up. Happy to talk about these things. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I get a lot of listeners who connect and then ask a lot of questions. And I love, I do enjoy spending part of my lunch hour just sitting down and checking out LinkedIn and Twitter and answering questions. I do actually enjoy it. So if you want to talk about the show or anything that comes up, please feel free. But other than that, just thanks to the listeners. We've gone on a little bit of a hiatus here, but even with kind of slowing down the cadence of the show for a bit, this download numbers keep going up. It's pretty amazing. I get a lot of messages from people who have started at the beginning and now they're at episode 95 or 96 now. And they're like, hey, when's the next one? And I love that enthusiasm. I love the fact that people are sharing the show. So just thank you. I want to make sure that I show that gratitude, because without the listeners, we don't get to do this. And it's really awesome that you're all out there. We are at the end of the show, though, and Esther, Faye, thank you so much for talking about learning. I hope people got a lot out of this. I certainly did. Definitely some good ideas and reinforced some thoughts that that I was perhaps not sure about. So thank you for that. And again, listeners, thank you so much. And I think I'm just going to say, everyone have a great night.
Thanks for listening to Agile for Humans. Let's keep the conversation going. Drop us a question on Twitter @AgileForHumans or visit agileforhumans.com.